signing on the air. This is the new Z100.
New York City was an impossibly saturated media market.
That was the dream. Hear your song coming out of the radio.
And it was really like this communal experience.
I didn't like New York radio at the time. It was uninspiring, and it was ready for a takeover.
And then came Scott Shannon.
Live from the Penthouse Studio, the flamethrower.
Scott came in not knowing anything about New York City.
They started at the very bottom of the barrel.
We were in last effing place. We suck.
I almost fell out of my chair. No one ever says you're doing poorly in radio.
We're going from worst to first. We need your help.
He recruited the audience to build our audience.
Z100 became the biggest thing in New York radio.
From the top of the Empire State Building.
Everybody broadcast from the top of the Empire State Building.
That is Scott's marketing genius.
The reach of Z100 was felt from coast to coast.
Made me feel like I had the freedom to do really experimental projects.
Z100 was a renaissance, a musical culture in the city.
Mr. James Brown!
Z100.
Wait a second. Did Scott Shannon create Z100?
That's why I'm doing the movie now. Boom, and you're in it.
Holy shit.
This is one for music nerds, radio geeks, documentary lovers, or perhaps you are some combination of all three. Worst to first, the true story of Z100 New York recently made its debut on streaming services. It's a good watch, particularly if you grew up listening to the radio in the 70s and 80s. If you missed that era, it's a really fun snapshot of how crazy radio and the music business was in that time period. Elvis Duran and Scott Shannon worked on this project together, bringing in a guy named Mitchell Stewart to direct, write, and really pull it all together. I will throw in some links in the show notes, but there's an interesting mix of people in this thing from the music business, including Jon Bon Jovi, Nile Rodgers, Debbie Gibson, and Clive Davis. I had a short amount of time to speak with Mitchell about his experiences working on this documentary, just about 20 minutes, and he spoke for close to 10 minutes after the first question that I asked him. So as I told a friend after the fact, I had about 86 more questions, but I do think that we covered some good ground in the time that we had. I thought there'd be some fellow music nerds here in the record player audience that would have interest in learning more about this film, so I hope you enjoy. I'll throw a link in the show notes so that you can check out the documentary for yourself. We've got some great episodes of the Record Player on tap for next week and beyond, so make sure that you are subscribed, and of course, you can follow us at Record Player Pod. RecordPlayerPodcast.com is where you'll find a complete archive of our episodes to date. We invite you to join the Record Club, where we are constantly posting stuff related to the episodes that we're doing here. Most recently, some cool Little Village audio that we discussed in our episode this week about the 30th anniversary of the Little Village record. Thanks as always for listening. Here is the conversation with Mitchell Stewart, digging in behind the scenes of Worst to First, the true story of Z100 New York.
Hey, Matt. Good morning. How are you?
Mitchell. Doing great, man. I had just watched the film last night, and as a total radio nerd, you checked all the boxes on this one. This was such a fun watch, so I'm really glad to get a chance to talk to you about it.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so embraced by people in radio. When they asked me to do this, and I'm actually technically on vacation, I said, I'll wait. Vacation can start when this is over, because people have just been so kind and so appreciated it, honestly.
Well, as I kind of alluded to, I mean, this new documentary, Worst to First, the true story of Z100, I mean, it is fantastic stuff. Whether you are a radio nerd who's navigated the roller coaster that is radio or firsthand, or someone that grew up as a fan of Z100, Scott Shannon, the whole cast of characters, even if you're like just a music fan or somebody who loves a good documentary and doesn't care at all about music, there's something here for everyone. For you, I wanted to start out with Z100 and Scott Shannon. Like, how did you kind of first become aware of both?
So it's very interesting. I was a musician the first part of my career for many years, and then I went to film school, and I thought I had left music behind. And of course, I started working on music videos and nothing but music, because that's the way the universe intended. So music has always been, you know, in the fabric of myself, my wife Enid's life. I mean, it's just it's music. After all, what's more important than that? And so as a musician, I was playing punk rock and playing in all the clubs in New York that everyone heard of that are legendary.
Nice.
And I had no knowledge of Z100 whatsoever. Hmm. And then in about 2004, I got a call from a friend of mine who, of course, said, hey, I've been tracking your career. Would you like to go work with Z100 and do some commercials or what have you? And I said, oh, Z100, I'm not sure it's going to be a good fit, but why not? So, and I had the joy of losing $1,000 on the job, but I got to go backstage at the Garden, which was the reason I went there. That was my incentive.
Yeah.
And then I met all the people, Tom Pullman, Sharon Daster, Paul Maroldi, Don McLeod, Darren Pfeffer. I met these people who I thought were these pop music. What the heck did they know? Because I'm a punk and I know everything. And these people love music more than anything. And they loved radio. And I'll tell you something. If you want to experience the power of radio and the power of music, walk into Madison Square Garden on a iHeart Jingle Ball, then it was in a Z100 Jingle Ball concert, and hear 19,000 screaming kids screaming for their reality in music, just like our reality in music where it was our bands. I mean, that's love of music. And so I was really inspired and worked with them for a number of years, helped create content for the beginning of iHeart. And I thought, again, I put that in my rearview mirror, right? And then I get a call from Scott Shannon's agent, John McConnell, who said, I keep hearing your name. I go, uh-huh. Nice. He goes, no. We keep hearing your name as a director that you're the only one that could do this documentary. I said, on what? And he said, on Z100. And I said, what does Scott Shannon have to do with Z100? And he said, he started it. And if you saw the movie, you saw Gavin DeGraw's reaction when I told him that Scott Shannon started the station.
Oh, yeah.
That was the same as mine. I said, what? Really? Scott Shannon? Isn't he the PLJ guy? And then I met him, and it was, you know what? It's not a kindred spirit, because Scott's not easy. And there's a when I put on my documentarian head, I'm not easy, but it was just like, this guy's a story. You know? This guy's a story and a half. I mean, he is charismatic. He's like, I keep saying, he's the character Mr. Wolf from Pulp Fiction.
Nice.
He speaks fast. He talks fast. He does everything really fast and you know, calculates in a drop of a hat, 9 different answers to any question. And I said, okay, I can't let anyone else tell this story. And my only rule was, you know, I'm going to tell the truth and see where the story goes. And it turned into a love fest for radio and music. And, you know, you have to get out of the way as a documentarian and let the right story be told. And so we focused on the 74 days that Z100 went literally from worst to first in New York. I don't think it'll ever happen again. So,
yeah.
You know, as the caretaker of that story, I was just, you know, thrilled to tell it. If you're familiar with Jim Kerr, this is almost my favorite story.
Yeah.
So there were radio wars, and I know you know what that meant.
Of course.
And so, you're right. And so we couldn't have Don Imus in to defend himself or portray his position because he's not with us.
Sure.
So we went to Jim Kerr, who at that point was, you know, early 20s, heartthrob, you know, at PLJ, king of the world, blah, 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 blah. And we said, okay, Jim, tell us what it was like to do battle with Scott. And we thought we were going to hear all of these like horror stories. And essentially he said, the guy steamrolled me. It was a knockout in maybe the third round. And, you know, he wouldn't say anything derogatory. He was just respecting an opponent that came into town and kicked his you-know-what. And I give Jim a lot of credit because I kept digging and there was nothing to dig up, you know? So it's a wonderful story about, I hope it's an inspirational story, to be honest, if that can be corny for a second. Because Scott did, you know, the ultimate David or DeVita versus Goliath story. He came to New York. He had been here maybe 3 times in his life, more or less. Knew nothing about New York other than it was going to be this crazy market that was oversaturated by the icons of the industry at that time. And he, you know, he got punched between the eyes, you know, came in 51st place out of 50 radio stations.
Yep.
And went on the air and did the rant of all time. you know, and people knew he was serious. You know, and, you know, knowing Scott so well, was he being P.T. Barnum and doing like a wrestling-like rant or promo? Well, maybe.
Sure.
But people got behind it. And if you think about it, the internet didn't exist yet.
Oh, yeah.
What existed in New York, right, was local stations. So the local TV stations picked up on this radio guy who was ranting and raving and who went from worst to first. So it became this phenomenon unlike anything else. As Scott said, it all went by too fast. I wish he could have maybe played a little bit better. But, you know, I don't know. Do you think that could ever happen again? Because I don't.
Never. And, you know, there's a couple things I want to get to. One, just being the character of Scott Shannon. But this could have been
a character.
Yeah, I mean, you referenced it. So, like, that's something. But this could have been a longer film. I appreciate the brevity and how concise it is.
Yeah.
This film is one that keeps you engaged throughout. So I wondered, like, what's a story that did not make the film that you hated to cut out?
Well, this is first of all, thank you for asking that, because that's come up a lot. Why is it cut so quickly? Why did you keep it at an hour and change, a little bit of change? And it was done intentionally. It wasn't going to be a Scott Shannon biopic.
And
it was going to be what defines that moment. And defining that moment of the 74 days that they went from worst to first, that was the story, you know? There is a ton of things. You know, our first cut was 3 hours.
Nice.
And, you know, so as you can imagine, and there's a story that Nile Rodgers tells, which was phenomenal to me. And we got a little bit of it in, the essence of it in. But we were talking about David Bowie's Let's Dance. And Nile Rodgers is Nile Rodgers. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's nobody else like him ever.
He's so great to talk to, too.
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, it was the only interview we did actually on Zoom, and I feel like I know him. I mean,
yeah.
If we were going to do a half hour, we did 90 minutes.
Yep.
So when you talk about things that were cut out that we couldn't use, and he talks about Let's Dance, and I asked him, why Stevie Ray Vaughan? You know, here's this Texas, you know, blues rock guy. Why are you putting him into a pop song? And he said, that's the point of Z100. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you could take Stevie Ray Vaughan, you could take me, you could take a little bit of disco, you could take David Bowie, who before that was making art records with Brian Eno and was looking for that next hit. And he said, when you could put all that together and mix it in the cauldron and come out with what you hope would be a mainstream song, that's what Z100 is. And I said to him, mainstream, you know, being a former punk rocker, you know,
sure.
Mainstream, that's like the kiss of death, right?
Yep.
He said, no. Mainstream means you've crossed over. And when you've crossed over, that means that someone who has not heard your music before is hearing it now. And, you know, that was a 5-7 minute conversation. And, you know, can we have had a 2-hour movie? Of course, but it also wouldn't have been the same kinetic experience as it was for Scott as he was living through it. So that's why you'll notice so many of sentences and paragraphs cut together with a number of different people.
Yep.
Because I saw them playing like the role of the Greek chorus for Scott. You know, they were witnesses to what happened, and we want to get in as many of them as possible and still make a cohesive film. So, you know, I hope we did, and that was the intention. You know, I didn't consider it risky. That was just the only way to do it, honestly. And then we started to go into the Elvis years, and it was just like, okay, this is just getting, no, we have to stop. And, you know, we have about an hour and a half sitting on the shelf about, you know, the Elvis Duran years and
oh, cool.
How they went from worst to first. So, you know, if we get enough love and people want it, you know, it'll find its way for like a part two. But, you know, this to me was a quintessential Z100 story. You know, because it'll never happen again.
So a few years ago, I did an oral history for the 50th anniversary of WMMS here in Cleveland. And obviously, Cleveland plays a big role in the story of Z100. Those two stations are, you know, very closely connected. So I have a lot of love for what you've accomplished with this film. And in particular, all of the audio and video that you have from the era. I wondered, like, what was the hardest element of the overall story to flesh out?
You know, as a documentarian, all of us, I think, dive in the deep end, and then you start doing your research and research and research, and your research, you uncover something that gives you another story arc and gives you that moment and gives you those next 3 minutes that you want to, you know, get as much as you can into it. We had, and you will probably know this name, you know, because I wasn't aware of it, but Art Vulo, who Scott Shannon calls, you know, the best friend of radio.
Yep.
We were fortunate that Art, Scott introduced me to Art, who is another character and an amazingly kind guy, who, you know, gave us his archives. Now, the good news is he gave us his archives, and Art Vulo was sitting in the early days of Z100 with a camera on his shoulder and filming everything, you know. The little bit of bad news for me was, you know, Art preserved it on videotape, which for those at home came before digital.
Yep.
And there were speeds. There was, you know, the fast speed, which you'd have a video that would last for 2 hours. But I guess Art wanted to save it all on the least amount of tapes as possible. So what he sent us was that EP, which is the slowest possible speed.
Oh, ever. Man. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we
had the worst quality for people listening.
Yeah, the quality was not the best, but, you know, Art's content was so amazing that the head of post-production, Alice Delchenko, spent about a month, you know, really color correcting and bringing it back to as close as it could be. And, you know, I think everything considered, he did well. Then I had two researchers helping me. And then, of course, every night for 2 months at 2 o'clock in the morning, as my wife will tell you, I would scour the net for stuff. And that's where I found the Madonna clips, you know, that someone had shot.
Nice.
And that's where we found so much of the material, you know, on YouTube that was in all different kinds of condition, as you could tell by the film. But the content was amazing. So even if it didn't look the best, even after Alex worked on it so hard, what they said was a moment in history. So, you know, I waved, you know, my white flag and just said, just go with it, you know, because the information was too important to get out. And don't worry about the quality of the image. Worry about the quality of what's being said.
So back to Scott, because I teased this and I realized I'm not going to get to Scott if I don't go back to it. Can you imagine, like, we've all worked with people and there's varying degrees. Can you imagine working with Scott back in the day and being part of his team, like when he gets those ratings back and sees that they are the absolute bottom and everybody, like, he just, you know, hands everybody their ass, including himself. Can you imagine, you know, prior to spending the time that you did, you know, with Scott Shannon, can you imagine like working with Scott Shannon?
I can't, you know, coming through music and having my own company now for more than 20 years, HQ Creative, we've worked with a lot of CEOs that are really high level, that are really intense people.
Sure.
Scott's a whole other lane. and as we alluded to, you know, walking back and forth, he chews gum on air. I mean, who chews gum while they're on air?
Yeah.
So he chews gum. He was wearing shorts because he was coming from Florida, even though he was, and it was the summer in New York. So he's wearing shorts. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. He's wearing, you know, rock and roll t-shirts before they were, you know, in vogue. And he's going, and he's just this guy that you just got to get out of his way. So he didn't tell anyone he was going to do the rant. He just put the whole thing on his shoulders and went, you know, wild. Now, just like, you know, I get to where when my business partners is Paul Heyman from the WWE. And I understand, I've learned a lot about that, the psychology of giving a promo.
Yeah.
Well, Scott Shannon is like the world heavyweight champion of promo givers. There's no one quite like him, and he's just riffing. Think about it. He's just riffing. He knows where he's going to get to, but he gets there in a very interesting manner of take no prisoners. So no, I don't think Scott and I mean, we butted heads constantly during this, but it was, hopefully it was out of respect, but you know, he and I in the same room every day, I don't think that could have worked out too well.
That's fantastic. Well, I think final thing from my side of things, and that just is, what's the favorite story you heard from Scott?
Favorite story I heard from Scott is actually the emotional thread. Because it was not the obvious, you know, it's not the obvious stuff, which is his history, which anyone could look up, right?
Yep.
It was the truest sense of the love of radio is, and we put it in the film because there was no way it wouldn't get in the film, is he talked about saving up his money to buy a transistor radio, and it must have been in the 60s. And he has that radio that he bought that just represented, you know, the window, literally, to be corny, the windows to the world, right? He still has that first transistor radio he bought. And you know, you could say he's P.T. Barnum, you could say whatever you want, but he has the first radio he bought. That, to me, tells me everything I need to know about Scott's passion for radio and passion for music. And that is my favorite story, actually, because it's like, for him, it's for me, it seemed like the ultimate truth. You know, there's storytelling, and then there's that, you know, divine story. And that's the moment that he found his path, you know, and it's represented in that radio that we put in the film.
Well, Mitchell, I'll leave here on a Cleveland tip. I appreciate this film so much. And one of the things I love is, you know, it is so peak radio nerd that you have Frank Foti talking about the processing of the station, but it's so important
love
to the
him.
Era. So I had to compliment that.
Thank you. Frank is like no one else I've ever met. He's amazingly successful, and he is the, you know, give the shirt off his back guy. And you know, everyone that we interviewed in the film all came from that, how can I help you, you know, kind of vibe. So hopefully that's reflected in the film. It was a joy for me because I just met so many really kind people. You know, no one had a chip on their shoulder. It was like they just wanted to tell the story of that time and relive it a little bit. And I hope it inspires anyone who was ever told to give up. I know it sounds corny, but, you know, we've all been there. You know, when you hit rock bottom is when you discover your true character. And, you know, your choice is stay there and become a victim or do whatever is necessary to get the strength to stand up and do it hopefully the right way. And I think Scott did that. And I think that whole crew of misfits that fits, that I, as I call them, they did it. And they're rightfully proud of what they accomplished. And look at Z100 today. It's still there. How many radio stations can say that?
Well, Mitchell, thank you so much, man. I will let you run, but thank you so much for making this film with everybody involved. It's really a great watch, and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, and thank you for having me again. Wonderful to meet you.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.